This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, so the Rockets lottery balls did not fall the way they wanted. The San Antonio Spurs got the first pick in the NBA draft. The Rockets got the fourth pick. Wembanyama, Scoot, Brandon Miller could all be gone by the time the Rockets even get on the clock.
It's a fun reality, isn't it?
It's a fun dream. I mean, that was tough, man. And, like, I hope Jabari Smith just, like, starts, like, hitting the gym. And I hope, like, look, when you talk about, like, totem pole of, like, where do the Rockets fit on teams that, like, I really care about, they're towards the bottom. But I hope Jabari Smith just beats Victor Wembanyama's ass like all the time, because I thought that video was fake. It's very real.
It's extremely disrespectful. Like, this is not what we're going to talk about currently, but something that I've just been totally baffled by is the amount of disrespect that gets thrown around with this Rockets franchise. Like, you've got people talking about Charlotte being a better destination.
Crazy.
Charlotte hasn't won 50 games, like, this century.
Michael Jordan's one of the worst owners in the history of sports.
Like, we're talking about stuff like that, and it just boggles my mind that the Rockets were a 50-win team 4 seasons ago.
I know.
4 seasons ago.
Yeah.
And have always had a history of being a winning franchise, and yet we're talking about it like it's the cesspool of mediocrity that is never going to find success ever again. And the discourse around the Rockets in that sense, just, I don't get it. Look, I understand that you may say, hey, we're not fans of what Tillman has done since he's come in as owner, and we think that there's some dysfunction in the franchise. Well, I would say historically, the Rockets have typically figured things out. And to just assume that these franchises that haven't had success for 20, 30 years are going to be immediately better than the Rockets as a landing spot for some of these young superstars, I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. Now, I will say, in the positive side of the lottery conversation, if your team's Scoot Henderson, I think there's a very good chance that he is a Houston Rocket still. Because if Portland is unable to trade that pick, then he's going to fall.
Yeah, they're not taking him. They've got Anthony Simmons,
Charlotte,
and Damian Lillard. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Charlotte and Portland are not going to take Scoot. So it would really come down to one of those two teams trading that pick 2 or 3 away that kind of throws in a big wrinkle for the Rockets. But to be honest, like, that's what Rafael Stone should be doing right now, is he should be calling Portland and being like, look, I know you want to win. So I know you're going to first attempt to trade the number 3 pick to add a superstar or high-level caliber player to team up with Damian Lillard. But if you don't get that, and you're going to have to go the opposite way and go into a rebuild, the 20th pick in the draft to me means absolutely nothing if I'm the Houston Rockets. And I'm trying to see if I can give 20 and 4 for 3 and just move up to a spot.
It's going
to
take a little bit more than that, I would guess, just because the NBA, if this was the NFL draft, that would be a slam dunk, easy move to make. But that's the problem, right?
That's almost a bad trade in the NFL.
Yeah, like that's the problem is once you get out, especially depending on the draft class of like those top 5 or 6 selections, like the talent decreases so rapidly that you're just throwing darts at the board once you get to 20.
Yeah.
And is it nice to have another dart throw at the board? Absolutely. But if you're the Rockets, you've already got plenty of those guys on your roster
You're too young.
Like, you don't need to add another young player into the mix that needs a ton of development.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they keep the 20th pick. I think they'll end up moving that. But like, and I think they're going to be pretty aggressive with 4. Like, whether they try to move up or trade it away, I would just be surprised. And this kind of connects back to, you know, with James Harden. Is Keith Pompey, the Philadelphia Inquirer, reports that his sources say in the league that James Harden is going to return to Houston to sign with the Rockets. And It's one of those things, Andrew, where I feel like we're going through deja vu here, where DJ Bieniemy from ESPN.com, he reported that during the Texans interview process that they told candidates, including DeMeco Ryans, that they were going to draft a quarterback at number two. And all the smoke that happened after turned out to be smoke because that seems to be accurate. That they were going to draft a quarterback at two. They took C.J. Stroud, and they had to find a coach that happened to be DeMeco Ryans to be good with that plan. And Keith Pompey reported, very similarly, that they told coaches, including Ime Udoka, that, or at least they got their thoughts on James Harden and what he would be. This feels inevitable.
It really does, unfortunately.
James Harden is going to be a Houston Rocket, and I don't know if it's the right decision. I would rather be trying to call Portland and say, hey, why don't you just go suck for a couple more years? Can we get Damian Lillard?
Versus
James? Like, I'd rather go that path, but if you don't like it, I think it's time, Andrew, to start moving into acceptance.
Yeah, that certainly feels to be the way that things are trending at this point. And what will potentially frustrate me the most with this return is that if James Harden's return impacts in any way, shape, or form what you were planning to do with the number four overall pick, I believe that's a terrible way to operate as a franchise. Yeah. You cannot let James Harden's return impact what you're going to do with the number four overall pick. Like, if you have a trade-up for Scoot at number two or number three already sort of worked out, and then you get the green light that Harden's coming back, so you scrap that trade, I would lose my mind as a Rockets fan. And on top of all of that, we had the Chris Haynes report earlier in the week, I believe it was on Monday, or maybe from the weekend, talking about Harden will only entertain suitors that present a competitive roster and the basketball freedom for the star to be himself, in addition to saying that he's looking for a four-year deal. I do not want 4 years of James Harden having the basketball freedom to be himself. We have experienced that plenty already, and the downstream effects that could have on the rest of this Rockets roster, I think could be calamitous for the development of guys like Jabari Smith and Jalen Green. Do I think that they would be better year one with Harden? Absolutely. But we're trying to build something to be a competitor longer term that can be a force in the Western Conference for years to come. And while James Harden might give you the initial shot in the arm that boosts you up to, let's say, low playoff contention, it's not going to make you a championship contender. And I don't think it sets the table for you to be a championship contender in the longer term future.
Yeah, I think the path that the Rockets are heading down right now is James Harden's your starting point guard. Jalen Green's your two. Jabari Smith is at the four. And then I think you're talking about Chris Middleton, someone like that being signed, and he has your starting small forward. And I think you're talking about taking the number four pick, and maybe, you know, if Portland's talking about moving three for DeAndre Ayton, maybe you're going to get in that conversation for DeAndre Ayton. Like, you've got all this cap space. I don't like Ayton personally. I'm anti that move. But, like,
this makes me sick.
I think the Rockets are going to – I think Tillman is going to change his tune. He said that in Ime Udoka's press conference that they've been in phase one. Phase two was relearning how to win. Phase three was winning championships. I think they're trying to skip phase two. And that, like, they're going to try to develop Jabari and Jalen and Alpi while also trying to win aggressively.
And that's totally fine. I believe that you can do that. I just don't believe that James Harden is the player that you can do that with. James Harden 5 or 6 years ago? Absolutely. I would be totally on board, give him whatever he wants to have him come back. That James Harden is not walking back through the door. We've watched him in the playoffs these last two seasons. Anyone who's worried about James Harden's collapses in game sevens as an issue for this team, look, that if that is your issue with him coming back, that's so, so far down on the list for me, it's laughable.
I mean, I would take that right now, to be honest.
100%. Like, if you're worried about, oh my God, James Harden might collapse in game seven in the second round, I would love to be in that situation, first of all. Secondly, I don't believe bringing James Harden back is going to put us in that situation anyway. So, like, I don't believe it's even a concern in the first place. My bigger issue is, how is James Harden going to impact the on and off court development of some of the young stars? I think on court, it should be okay, especially with a guy like Jabari Smith, especially with a guy like Alperen Şengün. But if you want Jalen Green to have the ball in his hands more and become a secondary playmaker, how well is he going to develop in that facet of his game when James Harden is monopolizing the ball a lot of the time? Like, if you're a spot-up shooter like Jabari Smith, James Harden's going to feed you open shots. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to be the case for Jalen Green or even for some cases like Alperen Şengün. We want him to be the center point, the hub of the offense. If James Harden's coming here, Alperen Şengün is not going to be the center point of your offense. Absolutely not.
Yeah, my biggest question for James is would be two parts. 4-year contract, like how serious are you about getting max money?
Yeah.
Or like are you willing to do 4 years and get the long-term commitment for lesser money? Cuz like that changes the conversation a little bit. And then the real question just becomes how much do you believe him that who he was, you know, in Philadelphia is who he's going to be going forward? Because with Joel Embiid, with the 76ers roster, he really became like a pass-first point guard who could score. Like, yeah, on any given night when Joel Embiid's also choking in the playoffs, James Harden could drop 50. But, like, on most nights, he was pass-first. Something that this roster, like, desperately needs. Like, in the perfect world, James Harden comes to Houston. Like, if you want to play it, like, perfectly, James comes to Houston. He doesn't take max money. He's committed to being a pass-first point guard. He's, you know, it's real about his mom lives here. His businesses are here. It's not going to get more jerseys retired in a strip club. Like, it's about, like, being a leader on a basketball team. There's a path to this working. But can Ime Udoka, like, can he get that at James?
It's just not the most realistic path to me. Everything that we have seen from James Harden up to this point in his career tells us is that he is one thing. And I don't think that thing is being the leader of a locker room who is going to, you know, galvanize and further the development of young players to reaching their full potential. I'm not saying that he would not be good for Jalen Green initially. I think he would be good for all the young Rockets players initially. I just don't believe that he would help them into reaching their ultimate ceilings as players. And if you're the Rockets, that's sort of what you want to do. That's what you want to accomplish with the moves that you make this offseason is maximizing the potentials of Jalen Green and Jabari Smith. And I just don't know if James Harden is the player to help them do that.
I don't either. But I as soon as you sign James, though, the trajectory of your franchise does change.
Drastically.
Like, there's no more embracing the suck or hoping for lottery balls to fall your way. Like, you're going to go sign James, and then they're going to have to be aggressive with draft capital, with the number 4 pick, salary cap. Like, you got to try to win.
They're in the playoffs. I guarantee you, if James Harden comes here, they are in the playoffs next season.
Absolutely.
There's one thing that James Harden does better than almost anybody, not named LeBron in the NBA. He raises the floor of your performance.
Oh, yeah.
James Harden is arguably the best floor raiser in the NBA. This team is in the playoffs next year if James Harden is on the roster. The question is that really what's best long-term for the development of all the young guys on the team?
Yeah, the thing they're dealing with right now is that was my emergency alert on my phone. I think there's another chemical fire if you guys haven't seen, not far from us. All right, well, on that note, we're just going to go to break. He's Andrew Hupcho, the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
You're listening to The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we got a question on here before we get to some Astros stuff about James Harden. Says, honestly, why does it matter if James is getting his jersey retired at a strip club? It shouldn't matter as long as he's not getting DUI or beating up his lady. His off the court shouldn't matter. All right, so with James Harden, I agree. James Harden is notorious for going to Vegas, coming back, and balling. But what you're missing here, and I can't read your name, I'm going to make you change it on Twitch, please, because you're trying to bait me into saying it. What you're missing here with James Harden and the strip club stuff is not about James Harden. It's about the other guys. The issue is not that can James Harden go to a strip club and go to Vegas and drop 50 the next night. We know the answer is yes. The problem is when James goes and he brings Alperen Şengün and he brings Jabari and he brings Jalen, and they can't hit a bucket if they were in an ocean.
Yeah.
because they are not James Harden. Only one person, two people, James Harden, Dennis Rodman, can maybe do what they do, where like they go off the rails and they still ball and they still dominate. So they're not the issue. The issue is the next guy.
Exactly.
That's the problem. That's why it's not a culture fit. It doesn't matter what he does off the court if he went by himself. If he commits to going by himself, and you might follow up with, well, how do you know that he's going to go by himself or he's going to take these guys with? Because he's already done it. Because after he got traded from the Houston Rockets, he went to a club with Jalen Green the night before a game and bought him like $10,000 shoes. Like, he's already done it. He wasn't even a Rocket, and he was influencing Jalen Green in a negative way. So, like, I'm sorry, Patrick Fertitta. I don't want your boy to come back, because that's what this is really all about. Patrick wants his boy back. Tillman wants jersey sales. And, like, they're not thinking about winning, because I don't know how you look at James Harden and say this is winning basketball when you can go get Damian Lillard. We just were talking about Paul George. Like, you could just wait for Luka or Giannis. Like, you could trade for Joel Embiid. He might be on the market. Like, there's a million things you can do besides take James Harden, and it's short-sighted, and that's why I don't like it, but it's happening.
Yeah, perfectly well said.
It's happening. Like, I got bad news for you. Like, he's coming to town. Like, yeah. I would be stunned if he's not here, to be honest.
From what Jake, Cody, and Brad have told me in their conversations with people behind the scenes to some degree, is that if you talk to anyone within the Rockets organization or around the Rockets organization, they basically act like it's a done deal that he's coming back. And basically anybody with any connections to the league tells you the same thing. So at this point, it feels like it's a heavy, heavy favorite that James Harden is going to be wearing a Rockets, probably number 13 jersey in the very near term future.
Look, I often get accused of having bad takes. I would be willing to wager money right now that the Rockets lose a first-round draft pick because of James Harden. There's definitely some illegal tampering going on right now. Like, they're going to get – I don't know why. Like, I don't know how you don't think there is. Like, there's all this – it's such a sure thing that he's coming back. I'm like, they're going to get crushed for tampering. Like, yeah. It just – it's going to be like the icing on the cake.
If they're smart, he doesn't sign the very first hour of free agency.
At least wait 2 hours. Like, and that's what happened. It happened to the Bulls. Like, they signed Lonzo Ball, and they got dinged a second round pick because, like, everyone knew it was so inevitable that Lonzo Ball was going to be a Chicago Bull.
Literally, the second free agency opens,
and then he opened, he signed. Like, yeah, no duh, they were tampering. Like, that's what's happening here too. But let's get to the fun stuff, the good stuff, the Astros. And we spent a lot of time earlier, Andrew, talking about injuries and just, you know, where this team's been at. But look, the Astros are tied for the best ERA in the major leagues with Tampa Bay.
They've taken the lead, actually, by 0.02. By 0.02. Okay. 3.36 to 3.38
nice.
For the Tampa Bay Rays.
What the Astros' rotation and bullpen has done has been absolutely incredible so far. I think the question at this point almost becomes, you know, we were talking about trades earlier, and how do you figure out, you know, where you add in the lineup? I think the question for the rotation is, how necessary is it to trade for another arm, knowing that even though Lance McCullers threw another session today, bullpen session, we'll throw a live BP hopefully early this week or in the next couple of days, like, they're slowly bringing him back. Urquidy's timeline is really kind of a mystery at this point.
Shocker.
How important do you think it would be for the Astros to acquire, like, an above average to, like, playoff caliber fourth guy in your rotation to win the World Series starting pitcher?
I think it's less important than acquiring somebody who could potentially play first base on a significant basis and displace Jose Abreu. I believe that getting McCullers back and, in theory, getting Urquidy back, obviously, like you said, that timeline is just shrouded in mystery right now, and that's how the Astros operate, right, is they never give you a single idea of what's going on injury-wise. But I believe that the job that the Astros have done sort of keeping this rotation as good as it's been with the patchwork of Brandon Belak, J.P. France. Now, I will say that I believe that Brandon Belak is walking the finest of fine lines in his starts.
Oh, yeah.
And that dam is going to break at some point in the very, very near future. And he's going to be tagged for like a 7 or an 8 spot. Because
in an inning,
the bases are loaded at least once, damn near every single time he's been trotted out to the mound. So that dam will break at some point. But this franchise, historically, they find a way to patchwork things together when it comes to the rotation. And the bullpen is back to being the best bullpen in baseball, in my opinion. And with that being the case, you're not asking as much from your starters. So I don't think it's as of much importance to bring in a starting arm that's going to get you 5 or 6 innings, assuming that you in the Astros front office know that you're getting Jose Urquidy back later on in the season. If it's a Michael Brantley situation where you're not entirely sure, then hell yeah, go get yourself another starter. But I'm hoping that the Astros front office has a little more control over that situation than they do with Brantley.
Yeah, I think that the likely outcome for the rotation is that they add a low-level starter, a rental, to kind of be an insurance policy for injury through the regular season. Maybe you expand to a 6-man rotation. Look, this is a staff that has thrown more innings than pretty much anyone in baseball over the last 2 years. I mean, Framber Valdez threw well over 200 innings, World Baseball Classic. You know, I don't even know if that 200 innings last year, I think that's only the regular season. Doesn't even count for what he did in the postseason. You got a World Series run or an ALCS run the year before that. Like, it's just these guys keep going just deep every year. And I think moving to a 6-man rotation would be wise. And, like, that's where adding a pitcher or hopefully JP France, you know, the first two starts is more of who he is than the last start. But, you know, Hunter Brown, you know, doesn't have a ton of innings stretched out in his career. So, like, you want him to be fresh for the playoffs. So, like, I think acquiring a starting pitcher would be good, but I agree. I think the most likely scenario is the Astros, you know, on his way out the door into retirement with hopefully a second World Series, they try to gift Dusty Baker a dominant lefty in the bullpen. Like, that to me feels like the most likely path for what the Astros do. Like, that's the splash at the deadline.
If they add an arm, I would be more surprised if it was in the rotation than if it was in the bullpen. So I believe that you're right, that if they add one more piece, and also if they add another piece to the bullpen, that continues to lessen the strain that you would have on the rotation, right? And all of a sudden, if you're not relying on Ryan Stanek as much necessarily, I think that's probably a good thing given the performances that he's had this season. If you're relying less on a Rafael Montero than you have up to this point in the season.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely believe that the rotation and the philosophy of the organization typically has been, hey, we'll figure things out from that standpoint. We can acquire in a trade assets on other parts of the roster.
It's funny, you know, there's a bunch of guys that come up in trade conversations about that guy's not going to work here. You know, Joe Kelly's, Trevor Bowers.
Yeah.
Like guys that like scumbags, also just not liked. But where do you fall on Aroldis Chapman?
See,
because he is pitching really good this year. He threw the fastest pitch in the major leagues just like 2 days ago. I don't know. Like, what does Aroldis Chapman cost you? And, like, your bullpen's good enough. Like, does it hurt to bring him in to be like, hey, you're going to be our specialty lefty?
See, you've brought this up to me before, and I believe I said no the first time.
I know.
I'm going to say no the second time. Just because of the fact that relievers in baseball are typically such fickle creatures.
They really are.
And Aroldis Chapman is someone who's been a closer basically the entirety of his career. And to all of a sudden throw him into a role where, hey, Ryan Preston's our closer, Brian Abreu's our fireman/eighth-inning guy, you're just going to have to sort of pick up the pieces and find whatever's left over for yourself after that. I don't know how Aroldis Chapman would react to coming into the sixth inning or the fifth inning, you know, to especially like, okay, let's say there's men on first and second and Aroldis Chapman comes in the sixth inning. I have zero idea how he's going to react to that because he basically has not done it at any point in his career. And I would have a hard time believing that all of a sudden he's going to be able to learn that skill set and figure things out. Also, he's a terrible person.
For sure.
And after what happened with Roberto Osuna, I don't believe that this or an ownership group. And I understand that it's a different front office, but I just don't believe that ownership group, after all the negative press that went down with Osuna, that they're going to bring that upon themselves again. I think that Jim Crane is going to want to be as scot-free as like humanly possible.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. Just like the tension in the clubhouse, the fan perspective, the media, because like it's just more ammo to crush the Astros. It's just another book in Evan Drellick's next chapter of why he hates the Astros. Like it's just, oh my God, they also acquired Aroldis Chapman. All right, there is a guy on the Astros roster that's very good. His name is Kyle Tucker. It is time for Jim Crane to change his stripes. It's time to open the piggy bank, Jim. The piggy bank, Jim. We'll talk about it next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
RathPestControl.com.
You're back inside the bullpen with the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George, Andrew Carlson here with you for another half hour on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We just got done talking some Rockets and Astros in the last couple segments. But I want to talk about the future of the Astros here, Andrew, and not just can they go back-to-back. You know, we've seen Carlos Correa, Gerrit Cole, Dallas Keuchel, Charlie Morton, George Springer, all these like super talented players leave the Astros organization. And the Astros, even though some morons right now on social media are trying to write articles about how the Astros' downfalls began, maybe the dumbest thing I've ever read in my life.
A little premature.
The Astros have lost all that talent and just keep winning. They keep finding it's Javier. It's trading for Yordan Alvarez for a nobody relief pitcher. It's just like they keep finding a way. But I think that the Astros are at a crossroads that for the first time, Jim Crane, he needs to change his stance. I get why you let Carlos Correa go, especially considering the injury stuff that happened. I get why you don't pay a pitcher that long. But like Kyle Tucker should be under a 10-year contract already. And the more he plays this year, and when he gets top five, top 10 MVP this year at least, like it's going to only go up. They got to pay him this offseason. And giving him a 10-year contract, I don't think should be that big of a deal for Jim Crane. Because he's going to lose a boatload of money on Jose Abreu, who we signed at 36 years old. If he just paid Tucker now, he'd be a free agent at 35. So like you're willing to invest millions and millions of dollars in Jose Abreu at age 36, but not Kyle Tucker? Like, for what reason? Like, this guy, I think he's better than Correa, and I think he will be better mainly because health. He's going to be better than Springer in the long term.
If there's anyone that is worth breaking this sort of ideology the Astros had of not handing out these long-term contracts, or I'd say not long-term, longer than five seasons, right?
Sure.
They don't extend people beyond 5 years, and that's basically been Jim Crane's MO since he took over. Kyle Tucker is worth breaking all of those rules for because he is that good. He has been that good, and he's of the age profile, like you just mentioned, where you can lock him up conceivably for the remainder of his productive years in Major League Baseball and not be particularly worried about what sort of drop-off you're going to have at the end, because you're going to have him becoming a free agent again right at the very end of what should be his time as a really, really solid Major League-level player.
Yeah, and one of the things I think is the most interesting thing about Kyle Tucker is that Rob Manfred, just like 2 months ago, publicly stated that he is going to try to cap contract lengths in Major League Baseball. And I'll be honest, I would assume that Jim Crane is like, hell yeah, like, let's do this. Like, why do I have to compete for Carlos Correa in a 10-year deal when if he can only get six, like, awesome. And I don't know if the players would ever agree to that. Like, I don't know how you get to that conclusion between the Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association. That seems almost impossible.
I can't imagine that would be something they would ever agree on. They don't agree on much. I doubt that would ever be something they agree on.
And honestly, if you were going to do it, you already went on strike. You should have tried it last year.
Yeah.
Like, if you were going to do it, just Kyle Tucker is, he's 30-30 guy, gold glove. Like, he really, if Shohei Ohtani wasn't a thing, like if Shohei Ohtani goes to the Dodgers next year, I think Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez will be two of the betting favorites to win MVP, and they're on the same team. Like, that should be your 3-4 for the next 7-8 years. And the mistake that, you know, Jim Crane made in the past, or Jeff Luhnow, whoever it was, or James Click for a short time, is that they let this thing play out too far. You know, Kyle Tucker's got two more years after this, so the urgency isn't, like, it's not immediate. But if you let Kyle Tucker get into that last season and he's not signed, he's gone.
The longer you wait, the more expensive it's going to get. Unless Kyle Tucker suffers an injury, which obviously I'm not hoping that on him in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
The way that he's performed early on this season, all of last year, he's only going to get more and more expensive to extend.
Yeah.
And, you know, history would say that Jim Crane probably, for whatever reason, is not going to be willing to, like, when the price goes up, Jim Crane typically is one of those guys who's like, hey, you know what? A little too rich for me. I'm going to walk away. We saw it with Justin Verlander this past offseason. They set their price for players, and once they feel that the, you know, market evaluation is above what they should be, what their Astros believe and what Jim Crane believes that player is worth, they're like, all right, bye. You know, it's been nice having you here.
Well, and the one thing is, too, is you can say they've been right. Almost every, the only time they've really been wrong, I think it would say Uncle Charlie.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think they had any idea how much he had left in the tank.
You know, JV got booed off the mound the other night. His ERA is high. He was already hurt this year. George Springer has played some great baseball for the Toronto Blue Jays since he left, but it's when he plays because it's not all the time.
And that was this year when he was here, too. He was hurt. Well, he was here a lot.
Yeah.
And you can't give, and I give them credit for this because that was the contract that I think myself and many other Astros fans were heavily in favor of, considering he was the heartbeat of the team for so long. You can't give that sort of money and that sort of commitment to a player who's available at best 70% of the time.
Yeah, and Carlos Correa, looks like they're going to get that one right too. He's really struggling. He's got injury problems. Obviously, I mean, look, he signed deals with three teams this offseason. Like,
yeah,
it's never happened. The only one I think that like got away that's been great, I don't think you were in the game. Gerrit Cole knew he was gone. Gerrit Cole knew he was going to be a New York Yankee. Like, that was his plan. He was never going
to
stay.
You had your chance to get Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
And that was before he had his breakout season. So after his first year in Houston, they were offered the chance to, I think it was around 5 or 6 years, they were offered that chance from Gerrit Cole's side, not from the Astros side. And then he had that breakout season where he probably should have won the Cy Young over JV. And once you got to that point and he was that good, you knew that there was no chance the Astros were going to be in the bidding.
So, like, for the most part, I think, you know, I think Jim Crane has done, and the Astros management team, whichever iteration it's been, I think for the most part, they've got it right. And you also can always say they got it right because they just keep winning. Like, it's just George Springer's gone. Here comes Kyle Tucker. It might be Kyle Tucker's gone. Here's Drew Gilbert. Like, I mean, I would like to see Drew Gilbert, Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez in the same lineup at some point for, like, multiple years at a time. Yeah, could Drew Gilbert, like, could James Click, like, one real lasting memory besides building the best bullpen in baseball, be drafting Drew Gilbert? It feels like it could be. But Kyle Tucker is just, I view him as a different animal than these other guys. And a lot of it's because, unlike George and Carlos, he's healthy. And you got to pay him. I think it would be a huge mistake for Jim Crane to not pay Kyle Tucker, because you're not going to be able to replace these guys forever.
The assembly line runs out at some point. The Astros have had the greatest assembly line in Major League Baseball for the past decade, really, in terms of just, hey, we can replace just about whoever it is that comes up for a new contract and we don't want to re-sign. We can pluck a new player right out of AAA or who was already on the roster, who is being integrated into the major league team. And they've been able to do that almost seamlessly for the better part of 5 or 6 seasons now.
It's incredible.
And at some point, the well will run dry. And I believe that you're right. I believe that especially the health aspect is the most important part of this. You weren't willing to commit to George Springer or Carlos Correa because you had questions about how long that they were going to be able to stay healthy and how well their body would hold up over the length of an extended contract. I don't believe that those sort of concerns with Kyle Tucker, or at least I don't believe there should be those sort of concerns with Kyle Tucker, because it damn sure seems like you can run him out there every day and there's zero issue. We've had basically zero hints of any, you know, long-term structural issues with knees, back, elbows, etc. There's been no hint of that with Kyle Tucker. And if there's anybody that you're going to commit to, it should be the guy that seemingly has that strong foundation where he's going to be healthy and he's going to be a pillar of this team for 7 or 8 seasons.
Yeah, it's just, and just, you know, it's really, I think the Jose Abreu contract is where I just go back to of like, what are you scared of with Kyle Tucker? Like, you're paying Jose Abreu $19.5 million for the next 2 seasons after this one, and he's been absolutely just dog, like, the whole time. And it doesn't mean, like I said earlier, it could get better, but you committed $58 million to a 36-year-old baseball player. If you just signed Kyle Tucker to a 10-year deal today, it would end when he's 36. So that's where it's just like you've shown you're willing to spend with older players. You spent with JV. You spent with Abreu. Well, why not just spend on this guy to keep him here through that time, and then you can give him a 2 or 3 year deal after, or you can just let him walk. Like, or he'll be retired at 36. I don't know.
It appears like Jim Crane is just so deathly afraid of something happening in that window after 5 years where all of a sudden those following, 3 or 4 seasons just become a total wash and the player is almost useless. Kyle Tucker, like I just said, he is a player that is worth taking that risk for just because the injury history and the player profile backs it all up.
All right, he's Andrew Carlson. I'm Joe George. You got one more segment left to go. The Houston Texans obviously going to be a much improved football team this season, even if the win totals don't necessarily show it. But are there still free agents out there you would like to see the Texans add? Because there's at least one guy who has been talked about a couple times on the station that seems like he might be interested in coming back to Houston. We hit on that next year on the final segment of the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, so the Houston Texans win total this year, win projections. I don't know how you feel, Andrew. Like, feels like they're a little all over the map. I've seen 5.5s. I've seen up to 6.5 in Vegas. A lot of the projections you're seeing from ESPN, CBS, I think the most common number I see is 7. Or I mean, 6 or 7 wins?
7 is where I would peg them. And I think the line that I've seen the most has been 6.5. Initially, it was 5.5 when all the lines first came out, and people hammered the over on that.
So that's what's hard to tell is, like, how much did that get bet up versus, like, people are just, like, reevaluating the Texans roster and being like, oh, yeah, there's some talent there. Because there is. Like, there's no denying. My favorite projection I saw, or, like, if you're talking about, like, almost like best case scenario in a way without making the playoffs was the Texans and the Browns both finishing 7-10, but the Browns beating the Texans. No, the Texans beating the Browns. So the Texans would pick before the Cardinals. Like, they would pick at like 11 and then the Cardinals would pick at 12. So, like, you're talking about, like, when you talk about, like, the scope of the Will Anderson trade, like, you traded away your first, but you've both have finished 7-10, tied with the Browns, and you're still picking one spot ahead. Like, now that would be like...
That would be lovely.
That'd be a huge win.
That would be awesome.
Jeremy Brannon would be crushed for being wrong.
I have a hard time believing that scenario just because the Browns have improved again this offseason.
Their schedule is brutal, dude.
That defense was Za'Darius Smith and Myles Garrett on the edge.
That's a good trade for them.
That was a fantastic trade. When that news came down, I was legitimately upset because I knew that that probably is adding at least a win or two to their end of season total, just because I know what kind of impact he has, and upgrading from the guy that we're about to talk about in a second here to Za'Darius Smith, just a tiny little upgrade.
So Jadeveon Clowney talked with Mark Berman. Congrats on your retirement. And there was some conversation about, you know, potentially coming back to Houston, how much you like it. And, like, my takeaway was, and like yours seems, is that he's somewhat open to the idea.
He seemed like he's a big fan of D'Amico Ryans, which it seems like every player in the NFL is, which is awesome, because how long has it been since the Texans had anything to make them an attractive destination?
Dude,
sure seems like they finally have something in D'Amico that makes them that.
If people like D'Amico and people like CJ, free agents will come. Like,
Houston's a destination, man. You just have to not be a total dumpster fire of a franchise.
And as J.J. Watt said on Part of My Take this week, probably the most underrated food city in the country.
I don't even think it's underrated. I think that it's – I think – well, maybe
– all right. So
maybe I'm speaking too much as a Houstonian.
I'm going to agree with J.J. I mean, look, my mind was, like, blown when I moved here. Just got to know what to expect. Like, Tex-Mex, not a thing in, like, the Midwest. Like, barbecue – is not real barbecue, I learned. Like, when I moved to Texas, like, I was like, I've never really eaten barbecue in my life.
Yeah, I've had brisket in Illinois. Let me tell you, it tastes a little different up there.
I never had brisket till I moved to Texas. Like, when in, like, Illinois, like, you say, like, hey, like, we're going to have a barbecue. It's like, you're making burgers and dogs. like, it's a cookout. It's not a barbecue. Like, but we call it a barbecue.
Yeah.
So, like, my mind was, like, blown. So, great food city. Everything's great about this place, except for the traffic.
Weather in summer could use a little improvement.
Yeah, I mean, hurricanes aren't great, but at least you know about hurricanes.
Hurricanes you know about. I'm more talking about the constant humidity and the 100-plus days. I'm not a huge fan of those. I could do without those.
Yeah, it's a little hot. I'm not going to lie. This job is going to make me a miserable person during the summer because it's 110 degrees outside, and it's negative 20 in the studio. Like, I don't know what to wear every day. This is like first world problems for real.
Got to have the tearaways, man.
I guess so. Oh, we're bringing the tearaways
back. We're going to bring the tearaways.
Can we get some ESPN 97.5 branded tearaway pants?
I mean, we could. I don't think Joel would enjoy those.
I'll wear them.
I'm just happy for you, Joel, that you came after they fixed the AC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard. But Jadeveon Clowney, would you spring him back?
No, and it's not because of the football player that Jadeveon Clowney is. Was he great his last year in Cleveland? Not really. Do I think that he would improve a relatively weak part of the Texans roster in their like edge/defensive end room? I do believe he would do that. But what is the one thing that Jadeveon Clowney has always been throughout his career? He hasn't exactly always been someone of the highest work ethic. He hasn't always been the greatest teammate. Just last year, he was complaining that the Browns were, you know, making it more advantageous for Myles Garrett to get sacks than they were for me.
Duh. Like,
well, no duh, dude. Myles Garrett's a lot better than you are, so.
And, like, does he not think that wouldn't happen here with Will Anderson?
Exactly. So, like, they're going to set Will Anderson up for success, not you, JD. So, no offense. I mean this in the nicest way possible. You were going to face the exact same situation that you were in Cleveland, where the franchise is looking to set up their cornerstone defensive piece for continued success on that end of the field versus you. So if you were complaining about it in Cleveland, you're probably not going to be super happy about it here in Houston, especially when it's Will Anderson, a guy who's a rookie coming out of Alabama, not Myles Garrett, somebody who's already been a first-team All-Pro. So D'Amico has talked constantly about this swarm mentality of how everybody needs to be on the same page, and they're all attacking the football constantly. They're all working really hard. And while I do appreciate Jadeveon Clowney, the football player, I just don't necessarily think that he fits that idea and mentality that D'Amico wants the team to have.
No, I agree. And I think, frankly, like I think adding a defensive end would be a very good move for the Texans with where they are. Like, they're going to try to win football games this year. And, like, you know, Jerry Hughes, Jonathan Grenard on one side, Will Anderson on the other.
And I guess Jacob Martin.
Jacob Martin's back now. Killer Bees did not like when I did breaking news that he was coming back. I would look at a guy like Leonard Floyd or Robert Quinn as like maybe the next guy you look at. I don't think they're going to be in the Yannick Ngakoue market. I mean, just because I think he's going to want to start on a more consistent basis. But to be honest, I think Yannick Ngakoue still got some talent left. So there's some options. Like I just adding a pass rusher, even like a Melvin Ingram is out there. He's like 34, 35, I think, at this point.
He worked with Jerry Hughes last year.
Yeah, like I think they need to add some talent to the pass rush. But to me, I'm a hard pass on Clowney.
I agree. I'm a pass on Clowney, but they should add somebody in that pass rush department. Absolutely.
Yeah. He's Andrew Carlson. You can find him on Twitter at Carlson Radio. Thank you, Josh, our producer. He is on Twitter at IMJChevy. I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. Reminder to tune in to the Sunday edition of the Bullpen tomorrow at 10 a.m. RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald, and Sean Mapes with you from 10 to 12. We're back with our normal shows on Monday. I'm with the Killer Bees. Andrew's with the Wheelhouse. Thanks, you guys, for listening. Thanks for calling, texting. We'll talk to you next Saturday at 12.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.